This by Edgar Hutto, who retired after a long career in engineering with RCA. Mr. Hutto collects recordings of the swing era and has prepared audiovisual presentations on bands and personalities of that period. He has previously presented at ARSC meetings talks on the Victor Talking Machine Company and Fats Waller. He has prepared programs on Benny Goodman, Bunny Berrigan, Bing Crosby, and Hal Kemp. Currently, he is completing a four-part series on Duke Ellington. I'm pleased to introduce Edgar Hutto, who will speak today. Let me get the title exactly right. On Fletcher Henderson. That's after right. I thought you had a longer, fancy title.
Thank you. The program runs 45 minutes, so I won't say much. During his lifetime, Fletcher Henderson didn't get too much monetary or public acclaim. Most of the time, the only time you heard of him was on the record label and generally on as an arranger on Benny Goodman's record labels. So I hope the presentation will show that aspect of his life. After he died, a number of LPs have been issued that really cover Fletcher's music. In particular is the Columbia Study in Frustration with notes by Frank Driggs, and then the Smithsonian album with notes by J.R. Taylor on Fletcher Henderson. But the real thing is the Bible written by the late Walter Allen, Hendersonia. And Ann Allen tells me that she's down to the last few copies of the book. So if you're interested, this is what it looks like. I would like to thank Ann for permission to copy a number of Fletcher's albums, that is, taking pictures of the records, that is, taking pictures of the labels and recording some of them. And then to Fletcher's niece, Ozzie Burrs, for letting me use family documents.
One's first reaction upon hearing this recording of Down South Camp Meeting is probably that it's Benny Goodman's orchestra. It's really Fletcher Henderson's band in the September 1934 recording of Fletcher's own composition and arrangement. Henderson's career has been regarded as one of frustration, where his contributions to the development of the swing band have in the main gone unrecognized. Fletcher Hamilton Henderson Jr. was born in Cuthbert, Georgia on December 18, 1897, in a brass bed in the front corner bedroom of this house. His father, Fletcher Sr., was a teacher at Douglas Academy and was later principal of the Howard Normal School, which was dedicated to the education of young black children in southwestern Georgia. The school later became part of the county system and was named for the senior Henderson. Fletcher Jr. was the first of three children born to Professor Henderson and his wife, the former Ozzie Ina Chapman. Fletcher, Horace, and Irma all learned to play this piano, which was purchased on time payments in 1906. Reportedly, the Hendersons wore out three keyboards practicing their classical music lessons. In the fall of 1911, Fletcher entered Atlanta University's prep school. He didn't attend 1 year and completed his high school studies in 1916. He began Atlanta University's college program in the fall. Mathematics and science were Fletcher's major studies. In 1918, Henderson enlisted in the Georgia Student Army Training Corps and probably served as bandmaster for the unit. During summer vacations, Fletcher worked as a piano accompanist at a Woods Hole, Massachusetts resort owned by one of his teachers. Active in sports, Henderson won letters in baseball and football. He participated in musical activities at the university. The college yearbook shows that Fletcher had acquired the nickname Smack. It was predicted that his playing and compositions would make him the most widely sought musical genius in America. After receiving a BA degree in June 1920, Henderson went to New York City with the intention of enrolling for graduate work in chemistry at Columbia University. He obtained a part-time job as a lab assistant in a chemical firm. When his roommate, who played piano on a riverboat orchestra, became ill, Fletcher substituted and later became the regular pianist. In the fall of 1920, he began working as a song demonstrator with the Pace and Handy Music Company. And in October, he accompanied Lucille Hageman on a test recording at Victor. In January 1921, Harry Pace left the music publishing firm and founded the Pace Phonograph Company, which was the first all-Negro recording company. Its label was Black Swan. Fletcher became musical director for the new enterprise. The first records released in May 1921 were by baritone C. Carroll Clark, accompanied by Gordy Williams' violin and Henderson's piano. The first Black Swan recordings were of semi-classical, vaudeville, and popular songs. It was not until Ethel Waters came to the Pace Phonograph Company in April and insisted on Southern down-home music and accompaniment that Harry Pace and Fletcher Henderson became interested in blues-based music. Ethel's first recording for Pace had sales which pulled Black Swan out of debt. In October 1921, Pace organized a troupe, the Black Swan Troubadours, headed by Ethel Waters, to advertise Black Swan artists and records. An eight-piece orchestra, the Black Swan Jazz Masters, led by Fletcher, accompanied the troupe on an extended tour, which ended in July 1922. Fletcher had some doubts about traveling with Ethel, and he had his family come up from Georgia to get their advice and approval. While in New Orleans in April, Ethel, Fletcher, and the Troubadours made the first known jazz radio broadcast. Fletcher also heard Louis Armstrong for the first time and tried to entice him to join his group. After the return to New York, not too much is known of Fletcher's activities during the remainder of 1922. Several recordings were made by Henderson's Dance Orchestra, and Ethel Waters, Lena Wilson, and Trixie Smith were back in their recordings. Fletcher played in several bands and led a group of his own at the Terrace Garden. Early in 1923, Henderson was busy at the Black Swan Studios on Long Island, working with Ethel, Alberta Hunter, and other blues singers. He also recorded two piano solos. The multi-talented Don Redman came to New York with Billy Page's Broadway Syncopators, and he soon became associated with Henderson's freelance orchestra, recording for companies other than Black Swan. In April 1923, Henderson accompanied Bessie Smith in the first of more than 50 recordings which he would make during the next 4 years with her. August the 8th, Henderson's six-piece orchestra recorded at Bacalhauen, backing Edna Hicks, and the next day recorded with Lena Wilson and waxed two orchestra sides. These sessions marked the first association with Henderson of Coleman Hawkins, who would be the mainstay of Henderson's band for the next 11 years. During these years, Hawkins revolutionized the playing of the tenor saxophone. By the end of 1923, Fletcher had an established recording band, and he worked as a member of Shrimp Jones' band at the Bamville Club. Two of the four sides Henderson made for Edison were made on November the 27th. In January 1924, what was basically Henderson's recording orchestra began working at a new supper club, the Club Alabama. This photo taken at the club is the first of a Henderson orchestra. Charlie Green joined the band, replacing Teddy Nixon. Other sidemen were Howard Scott and Elmer Chambers, trumpets, Ralph Escudero, tuba, Charlie Dixon, banjo, Kaiser Marshall, drums, Coleman Hawkins and Don Redman Reeves, Fletcher the piano, and Alan Ross played violin and fronted as leader. In the summer of 1924, after a disagreement with the management, the Club Alabama engagement ended. Roseland Ballroom was searching for a black dance band to alternate with Sam Lannon's band for dancing. Henderson's orchestra was selected and Roseland would be the band's home for the next 5 years. It provided an audience with white clientele and broadcast over WHN. In addition to Coleman Hawkins, the band's primary soloist, and Don Redman, who was musical director and arranger, the band was greatly improved by the addition of Louis Armstrong and Buster Bailey, both from King Oliver's band. At first, the veteran Henderson sidemen regarded Louis as a big, fat country boy, but his trumpet playing and his ability to quickly learn the complex arrangements soon won their respect. So Long Mule and Shanghai Shuffle were among the first recordings made with Henderson by Armstrong and Bailey. On December the 24th, 1924, Fletcher married Leora Moats. She was a musician and had played trumpet in Bess Davis's all-girl orchestra. The Hendersons moved to a $30,000 home on Stryvers Row at 278 West 139th Street. In April 1925, Joe Smith replaced Howard Scott in Fletcher's trumpet section, just about the time Columbia began recording electrically. Members of the Henderson band accompanied Maggie Jones, Ethel Waters, and Bessie Smith in their premier electrical recordings in April and May 1925.
Ever since Miss Susie Johnson lost the jockey lead, there's been much excitement and motor beat. You can hear moaning, moaning night and morn. She's wondering where her easy rider's gone. Cablegram goes off in inquiry. Telegram goes off in inquiry.
Sometime after joining Henderson, Louis Armstrong showed Don Redman a book of manuscripts containing some melodies he and King Oliver had written. Louis told him to pick out one and make an arrangement for Fletcher. Don chose Dippermouth Blues. It was arranged with solos by Louis and Charlie Green and retitled Sugarfoot Stomp. It became one of Henderson's best-known recordings and was frequently used in the Battle of the Bands at Roseland. After 13 months with Henderson, Louis, at wife Lil's leading, returned to Chicago. The tour with Fletcher's band had been beneficial to both Louis and the band. Armstrong's classic blues-style trumpet fully developed while with Henderson, and Louis's influence on the band helped Its other outstanding instrumentalists, Charlie Green, Joe Smith, Buster Bailey, Don Redman, and Coleman Hawkins, immeasurably toward reaching their own potentials. The band's brass section remains strong, although its members change. Russell Smith, Rex Stewart, and Tommy Ladner were among the trumpeters. Benny Morton replaced trombonist Charlie Green, and Jimmy Harrison became the second trombonist. In the summer of 1926, Fletcher's mother, father, and sister came to New York for a visit. In a typical season, Henderson's band played at Roseland from October through June, then toured the Midwest to Chicago and Detroit's Greystone Ballroom, while the Goldcat Band toured the East. The Henderson Band was back at Roseland from March through May, but made one-nighters at the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem and other local spots. Summer tours were made through Pennsylvania and New England. Fats Waller contributed many selections to the Henderson Library, including Henderson Stomp, Whiteman Stomp, The Stampede, and St. Louis Shuffle. Fats also played piano and organ on several Henderson recordings. In October 1926, the Henderson and Goldcat bands battled at Roseland. In 1927, the Henderson band reached its peak of musical development. Don Redman's arrangements with the interplay between the brass and the reed sections of the band established the basic big band sound, which would flourish until the World War II years. Don Redman left the Henderson band in July 1927 to become the driving spirit in McKinney's Cotton Pickers Band. Was the first of the head arrangements, which became a mainstay of the band's book. Fletcher obtained numbers from other contemporary arrangers, and in 1928, Benny Carter became the band's major arranger. Carter, also a versatile musician, played intermittently with the band. Rather than travel by bus on tours, the band used several large touring cars and were noted for their ability to get from city to city in minimum travel time. In August 1928, Fletcher was seriously injured in an accident in Kentucky. Frank Driggs has written that while the Henderson Band had reached its musical zenith in 1927 and 28, its popularity and bookings began to decline. When it came to musicianship, Fletcher was fairly strict and demanding of his sidemen. On the other hand, in business matters, management, and honoring the band's commitments, he was carefree and not too demanding. Although Fletcher's band had the top musicians, it was no longer the pace setter as the 20s decade closed. Because the Depression affected record sales, the Henderson Band made no recordings for a 17-month period beginning in May 1929, although Coleman Hawkins and other of the sidemen made outstanding recordings with other groups. In the summer of 1929, the band replaced Duke Ellington's in a touring company of Vincent Heumann's Great Day, but the show closed before reaching New York. The band's association with Roseland Ballroom ended in the fall of 1930, but on November the 27th, the band began a long engagement at Connie's Inn, a prime location in Harlem. There were changes in the band's personnel. Jimmy Harrison left because of illness, and Benny Carter departed. Fletcher's younger brother, Horace, took on some of the arranging tasks and occasionally sat in at the piano. Fletcher began making arrangements also in order that the band would have some original scores when it engaged in the battles of music. One of Fletcher's first arrangements was a rework of Don Redman's 1925 version of Sugarfoot Stomp. Recorded three sides for Victor in 1927. In April 1931, the band was at Victor's studio in Camden for the first of three sessions by the Connie's End Orchestra. Most of the 1931-32 Victor sides and those on other labels also were more commercial than most of the band's previous efforts.
Oh, it looks like rain. Oh, but I won't complain. No, what a break, OG, for baby and me. We gotta stay home tonight. Oh, it looks like rain.
When John Hammond became associated with the newly reopened Public Theater, Fletcher's band was secured for the first week's bill in February 1932. John's enthusiasm for the band was dimmed somewhat when only one or two of the band were in the pit at the scheduled opening time.
Oh, you can get all wet, but brother, I'm set. We gotta stay home tonight.
Later in 1932, Columbia Records recording director Ben Selvin mentioned to Hammond that the bankrupt company had gotten requests from English Columbia for jazz recordings and asked John for his suggestions. Hammond replied that the greatest band in the country is Fletcher Henderson's. I'd like to bring Fletcher's band to your studio to make four sides. I'll make them for union scale and I won't charge you for my services. Fletcher was interested and a date was set for 10 o'clock on Friday morning, December the 9th. Two musicians were at the studio at 10 o'clock. John Kirby showed up with his bass at 12:15 and then the rest of the band. The recording officials were displeased, but three good numbers were whacked. The record sold well in England, and Hammond produced two more sessions in the fall of 1933, with Horace, the leader pianist, on one session. The band's personnel in the 1932-33 period included trumpets Russell Smith, Bobby Stark, and Red Allen, trombones Claude Jones and Dickie Wells, reeds Hilton Jefferson, Russell Proko, and Coleman Hawkins, Bernard Addison guitar, John Kirby bass, and Walter Johnson drums. Benny Morton, J.C. Higginbottom, Edgar Sampson, and Clarence Holliday also had been in the early 30s band. Hawkins had perfected his romantic ballad style and his improvised solos on It's the Talk of the Town and I've Got to Sing a Torch Song inspired and challenged many young saxophonists. Thank you. In 1933 and 1934, Fletcher and Horace's arrangements were augmented by such diverse arrangers as Archie Blyer, Will Hudson, and Russ Morgan. March 6, 1934, at Victor, Coleman Hawkins made his last recordings with the Henderson Band. Hawkins went with Jack Hilton's band in Europe and did not return to the U.S. until 1939. Other disappointments came to the band when it lost a Cotton Club booking to Jimmy Lunsford's band, which was superbly rehearsed and high on showmanship. A projected European tour was given to Cab Calloway's band rather than Henderson's. In early 1934, Fletcher's band was under the management of the Irving Mills agency. Henderson persuaded Lester Young to fill Hawkins' spot in the reed section. A Midwest tour was made in March and April, and while on tour, Horace sketched out the lines for Big John's Special and Down South Camp Meeting. Lester Young left the band as his tone and style didn't fit into the Hawkins mold. Chew Berry sat in briefly until Ben Webster was hired. Disappointment with the Mills agency made Fletcher sign with Mo Gale, owner of the Savoy Ballroom. September 1934, the band had three recording sessions for the new Decca label. Henderson Standards, Wrapping It Up, Big John Special, and Down South Camp Meeting were recorded. Concerning Fletcher's arrangements, Dickie Wells said, "Fletcher had a way of writing so that the notes just seemed to float along casually. You just had to play the notes and the arrangement was swinging. He didn't write too high. There wasn't any screaming, but his music used to make you feel bright inside." A road tour was made to Cleveland and to Detroit, where the band drew good business but did not get paid. They had to be sent bus fare to get back to New York. This was the last straw for the band members, and most of the men joined Benny Carter's band. There were rumors that Fletcher had received compensation for the cancellation of the European trip, and none of the band members received any. Fletcher had been booked for a week at the Harlem Opera House in late November 1934. Having no band of his own, he took over Charlie Turner's. Fletcher began furnishing arrangements that contributed to the early success of Benny Goodman's band. In fact, Henderson obtained more recognition from Goodman's playing of his arrangements than he received for his pioneering efforts with his own band. The new Henderson band played in New York City and in New England during 1935. Fletcher returned to Roseland Ballroom for several dates during the summer and the fall. By October, John Kirby and Buster Bailey had returned to the Henderson fold. Chew Berry and Roy Eldridge joined from Teddy Hill's band. Early in 1936, the band was back at Roseland for 2 weeks and then moved to the Lincoln Theater in Philadelphia for a week and then on to the Grand Terrace Cafe in Chicago for a 2-month stint. Benny Goodman's band was at the Congress Hotel in Chicago at this time and attended en masse the Henderson band's debut at the Grand Terrace. Roy Eldridge and Chew Berry made several small group recordings with Benny Goodman, Gene Krupa, Jess Stacy, and Alan Roos. The Before renewing his contract with Victor, Fletcher recorded four sides for Vocalion, including Blue Lou, Stealing Apples, and Christopher Columbus. The latter became a hit and was used as the band's theme. Several years in the very competitive big band business were difficult for Henderson. His 1937-38 Vocalion recordings had fewer solos, more vocals, and more commercialism. Contemporary reviews commented on sloppy section work and lack of discipline. There were too few rehearsals. It seemed as if Fletcher spent too much time on arrangements for Benny Goodman and had lost interest in leading his own band. In Buffalo in May 1939, the band attracted only 160 customers for a gross of $135. After an engagement at the Southland Cafe in Boston early in June, a tired and disgusted Fletcher Henderson disbanded, reportedly without telling his men in person. Fletcher joined Benny Goodman as arranger along with Eddie Sauter. Henderson's arrangements continued in the style that won the Goodman's band its followers, while Sauter's took the band in a new direction. Teddy Wilson had left Benny's small group in March, and Jess Stacy moved over from the large band, and Fletcher took Jess's spot. Later, Benny moved Fletcher to the trio and quartet, and Jess left Benny Goodman to go with Bob Crosby. Many were critical of Benny's action, for while Henderson was a great arranger, he didn't have Stacy's solo ability. By December, Johnny Guarneri was brought into the band, and Henderson was relieved of most of his pianist duties. In the summer of 1940, when Benny disbanded because of back problems, Fletcher took time to have a minor eye operation. The reorganized Goodman band returned to the recording studio. Fletcher made one more recording with Benny, his own Henderson stomp. By December 1940, Fletcher decided to give up the security of the job with Benny Goodman and get himself a new band. On January the 31st, 1941, the new Henderson band opened at Roseland and remained through April. On February the 27th, Roseland honored Fletcher's 17th anniversary on Broadway, and Downbeat presented him with a trophy as pole-winning arranger for 1940. A reunion was formed for Fletcher Henderson band members and hosted by Leonard Feather at Cafe Society on March the 30th. Henderson preferred the road tours to Roseland and had difficulty retaining his few veteran sidemen on tours. However, Fletcher was able to keep the band intact throughout the war years and play in all sections of the U.S. and occasionally in Canada. In July 1941, the band was in Fort Valley, Georgia to participate in a special ceremony honoring Fletcher's father. And 2.5 years later, the band was touring in Georgia when Fletcher Henderson Sr. died. A number of Armed Forces Radio Service transcriptions were made when the band was on the West Coast in 1944 and 45. Young sidemen Dexter Gordon and Art Blakey were in the wartime band, and Horace Henderson also toured with the band at times.
music by Fletcher Henderson and his orchestra. It's coming to you from the famed Casa Manana, located on Washington Boulevard in Culver City, California. To get things started tonight by calling the maestro Fletcher Henderson over. Smack, how things going tonight?
Everything's fine, Burley. How you doing?
Oh, just swell. How's about telling us what we're going to hear for the first number?
Well, we're out here in Culver City at the Casa Manana, but we're going to play a little stomping at the Savoy. How about it?
Okay.
October 1945, Fletcher made his first commercial recordings in 4.5 years for Musicraft. These sides were never issued on 78, but later on LP. Beginning in February 1946, the band began a stay at the Club De Lisa in Chicago, which lasted until May 1947. The band accompanied floor shows, which changed each month. On January the 26th, 1947, Fletcher participated in a concert sponsored by Paul Edward Miller that featured Bill Harris and Sidney Bechet. Fletcher left Chicago.
How was that? Then in 49 and 50, Fletcher had a small group in New York City. We played at Bop City, and then they were on the radio at night at WOR. And I believe in December 50, while he was playing, after he finished the session, he went home and had a stroke, and he was disabled for the next several years. Suffered a heart attack, and he died in December of 1952. During that period, the family was destitute, and Columbia produced a record with the Benny Goodman Trio, and the proceeds went to the Henderson family. Fletcher was buried back in his hometown of Cuthbert, Georgia, and to show the esteem that Fletcher and his family was held, they were buried in the White Cemetery, which is unusual for the South at that period, or even this period, as far as I know. Henderson was at his greatest, as Walt Allen says, and that would be the concluding part here. He was a businessman with Black Swan, of course, and he was, in the main, the great arranger of the big band era, and until Eddie Sauter and came along, and Cy Oliver, Fletcher Henderson was the number one big band arranger in the United States. I believe that we'll conclude it, and we'll be just about right on time. Thank you very much. We never had two projectors fail at the same time.